With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
$25 billion the auto industry.
The cost of that kind of failure is very high.
$1 million.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas, this is Cresta in the Afternoon.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
No, wait a minute, that's not right.
Al, you are so right.
I think I'm right, I probably am right.
You've got a very interesting point, Al.
Good day, I'm Al Kett. Who am I? Well, good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, and we have got 2 hours to talk about the things that matter most. New study confirms decline of Catholic colleges. This is conducted by the Cardinal Newman Society. It's a survey of attitudes at Catholic colleges and universities, looking at both current students and recent graduates under the age of 30. The results are less than encouraging. Patrick Riley joins us here to fill us in, answer your questions. Also coming up today, some news out of Great Britain. British Catholic priests have been urged. I'm just going to have to read this straight and then make comment. British Catholic priests have been urged to avoid homophobic jokes and asides and to express appreciation for the gifts that homosexual Catholics bring to their faith community. This is in a pamphlet distributed under the auspices of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. The pamphlet, produced by the Bishop's Marriage and Family Life Project, was welcomed by Peter Tatchell, an outspoken gay rights campaigner, who said the material is a big improvement on the past homophobia of some Catholic pronouncements on homosexuality. Well, Joanna Bogle joins us, British Catholic journalist. We'll talk about this. This pamphlet, with all that's going on in the world today, do you really think the big problem among English priests is that they're getting up in the pulpit and they're telling queer jokes? I don't think so. I don't think that's what's going on. Do you really think that what's going on among British Catholic priests is that, you know, every chance they get to do some sort of party or fundraiser, that they get up there and they start telling homosexual jokes, or they but somebody over there seems to think that this has to be a matter for public concern. I'm under the impression that English priests, anyways, are a lot more reluctant to talk about sexual matters at all, in any way, than even Catholic, than American Catholic priests. All right, we'll talk this over with Joanna Bogle. Who hires these people? Who hired this person to come up with a pamphlet? The Catechism is so wonderful and clear on this point. Don't offend gay worshipers. I don't even know who a gay worshiper is. I don't expect priests to get up and tell bawdy jokes in any way. I don't expect them to tell ethnic or racial jokes. I mean, come on. So why do we single out one particular class? In a class that has to do more with behavior than it has to do with some sort of immutable, non-moral characteristic. All right. What else? Oh, this is a great pleasure. 30 years ago, Father Edward Perrone, pastor of Assumption Grotto Catholic Church in Detroit, announced to his father, renowned big band musician Phil Perrone, that he had decided to enter seminary. And his father exclaimed that the music community had lost a great one. Today, Father Perrone is making history from his Detroit parish, and not only through great pastoral leadership, but by producing wholesome family musicals in the grand tradition of the great classics. Set in the 1920s, The Heretics is a story of a man made mean by the death of his wife, who softens when he meets an orphan girl. The show includes 45 cast members, many of them children, 12 musicians, including some members of the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. Father Perrone is with us to talk about the musical. So that's coming up in just, well, coming up in this first hour. Also today, Jim Moore comes back with us. The nation's largest group of atheists and agnostics is suing President Bush and the governor of Wisconsin and other officials over the federal law designating a national day of prayer. I wonder if you can get people like Lincoln in on this, too, if you can sue people posthumously. I think that might strengthen the case. The Freedom From, not Freedom Of, but the Freedom From Religion Foundation sued in U.S. District Court, arguing that the president's mandated proclamation calling on Americans to pray violates a constitutional ban. So we got real problems throughout American history with most presidents who have gone ahead and declared things like days of prayer and Thanksgiving, fast days, etc., etc., etc. Jim Moore has written has really compiled a delightful book called The Treasury of American Prayer, and we're going to ask him about this recent controversy. He teaches at the McDonough School of Business, Georgetown. That's coming up in this hour. So all that, but first the news with Nick Tom.
Thank you very much, Al, and a very good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News. It's Wednesday, December 3rd, the Feast of St. Francis Xavier. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is urging Pakistan to move swiftly to help catch the masterminds behind the Mumbai terror attacks. Rice says the U.S. is providing all tools necessary to find those responsible.
We are not going to jump to any conclusions about who is responsible for this, although the United States is prepared and is already actively engaged in information sharing, in forensic help to try and make those links.
Rice hopes to ease friction between New Delhi and Islamabad over the bloody rampage that killed 171 people last week. India has said the gunmen trained at a commando camp in its neighboring country. Rice says all nations must cooperate transparently and act with urgency and resolve. White House analysts are poring over proposals by the struggling Big Three automakers. GM, Chrysler, and Ford are seeking more than $30 billion in federal bailout loans and credit lines. White House Press Secretary Dana Perino said the Bush administration will be watching closely as the Big Three CEOs testify in Congress this week.
We have put forward a plan through the Section 136 program at the Energy Department, which we think could get bipartisan support and be able to help the auto industry. So we're going to be paying very close attention to the testimony from the automakers.
The White House has been generally supportive of efforts to aid the Big Three, but has opposed using money from the massive Wall Street bailout fund. Perino noted that it is too soon to rule anything in or out. The White House has said Congress can easily allocate $25 billion that has already been authorized to help the Big Three retool for higher energy standards. Some California lawmakers have introduced a resolution opposing the state's ban on same-sex so-called marriage. Members of the legislature's Gay and Lesbian Caucus and Senate pro tem Daryl Steinberg says the non-binding resolution will put the legislature on record as opposing the voter-approved ban known as Prop 8. Opponents contend the initiative is not valid because it was not approved by two-thirds of the legislature before being put on the ballot. There were some anxious moments aboard a U.S. cruise ship this weekend when pirates off the coast of Somalia apparently attempted to seize the vessel. This passenger says something was going on when the captain had to leave.
He just went on to the rear, to the stern, and disappeared out of sight. We went up for breakfast. We just sat down, and the captain said there were suspicious boats following us.
The BBC cites maritime officials as saying two small boats chased the Nautica and fired shots at the ships, but were unable to get on board. The captain managed to move the ship away and increase its speed. The Nautica was on a 32-day cruise from Rome to Singapore and had more than 1,000 people on board. And a joint promotional venture launched by the Cincinnati Zoo and the Creation Museum has now ended. The zoo pulled out of the deal following dozens of angry calls and emails over the partnership offering reduced prices to anyone who bought tickets to the zoo's Festival of Lights and the museum's Christmas-themed Bethlehem's Blessing. Zoo spokesman Chad Yelton said, quote, "It's not about us endorsing them or them endorsing us. That wasn't the intention of anything we were doing," end quote. Ken Ham founded the Petersburg, Kentucky Creation Museum and said, quote, "It's a pity that intolerant people have pushed for our expulsion simply because of our Christian faith," end quote. And now your fascinating fact for the day. There is enough concrete in the Hoover Dam to pave a two-lane highway from San Francisco to New York City. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
I'm Al Cresta. The nation's largest group of atheists and agnostics is suing President Bush, the governor of Wisconsin, and other officials over the federal law designating a national day of prayer. The Freedom From Religion Foundation sued Friday in U.S. District Court, arguing that the president's mandated proclamations calling on Americans to pray violates a constitutional ban on government officials endorsing religion. The day of prayer, held each year on the first Thursday of May, creates a, quote, hostile environment to non-believers who are made to feel as if they are political outsiders, end quote. The national proclamation issued this year asked God's blessing on our country and called for America to observe the day with appropriate programs, ceremonies, and activities. Join me right now to talk about this recent attack on the National Day of Prayer, and to look over America's long tradition of prayer, is James Moore, Jr. Jim teaches at the McDonough School of Business at Georgetown University, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Commerce. He sits on a number of corporate and nonprofit boards and has lectured widely and written widely on American prayer and spirituality. He's the creator of the American Prayer Project, an initiative committed to educating the public on the importance of prayer in the life of America. He's also author of Prayer in America, A Spiritual History of Our Nation. Jim, good to have you back.
Thank you, Al.
Well, this seems tedious to me to have to go through this kind of thing all the time. Freedom From Religion Foundation is well named. They simply want to try to make sure that there is no accommodation on the part of federal or state governments what they're interested in doing is insulating the faith of the American people from its civil institutions. I think that's an impossible task because people expect their civil institutions to, in some way, acknowledge their deepest traditions and their deepest commitments. What say you?
Al, honestly, I think that the religious and spiritual fervor of this country is so great, and it has been really since even before our founding, that the notion that somehow we're going to extinguish this candle that's been aflame for so many generations, I think is a bit, myopic, a bit narrow-minded. I really and truly, I've spent over a decade really immersing myself in the prayer life of America, both past and present, and I just can't tell you how truly optimistic I am about the fact that some of these efforts that are made, and yes, we deal with legalities, but that when it comes to the real passion, the real spirituality of the American people, there's not much that's going to be able to put an end to that, that's for sure.
Yeah, I agree. It just seems so, that's why I use the word tedious. It's like, come on, guys, let's face it. America, the American people have a certain recognized desire to pray. It's woven into their understanding of our country. And I don't see what is to be gained by these ongoing efforts to deny the obvious.
You bet. But, you know, it's also like the surgeon from California who took on those two words in our Pledge of Allegiance, under God. And, you know, we're going to unfortunately continue to have this. And I think in some ways when I agree with you. I mean, my goodness, to pick up the newspaper, to be able to turn on your radio program and to see the latest barrage of this sort of thing, it is tedious and sometimes very frustrating. But, you know, in some ways we should look at it almost as though the cup is half full rather than half empty,
mm-hmm.
because it is a continual reminder to all of us that, indeed, we have a country that continues to be so vibrant that it's able to withstand those kinds of assaults.
Yeah, I mean, just think of it. We've had a you can look at it over a two-generation period anyways, and America remains a very prayerful nation. And talk to me about the practice of the National Day of Prayer. What's its history?
Well, it was really at the height of the Cold War that when communism and atheism were certainly foremost in people's minds, that during the Eisenhower administration, actually before that under President Harry Truman, that there were efforts afoot to be able to put together a National Day of Prayer, and it has really continued to this day, this notion of being able to have not only a National Day of Prayer, but as you know, even in February, there is a prayer breakfast that the President of the United States, actually every president, has attended since it began during Eisenhower's administration. There's now a Catholic National Prayer Breakfast. There is a Hispanic National Prayer Breakfast. This sort of notion of trying to remember prayer and how important it is in the life of America has really proliferated over the past five decades, and it just continues on and on. So that again is a reason to celebrate the notion that prayer is, has, and will continue to be a vibrant part of American life.
Are there more opportunities for Americans as citizens to acknowledge some kind of spiritual foundation or to make some sort of a spiritual appeal for the good of the nation? More opportunities today than, say, 100 years ago?
Oh, I think there are more opportunities simply because of the evolution of our country, and I think technology has helped a great deal.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Quite frankly, all one has to do if you happen to be lonely and all by yourself at home is to be able to log onto a computer and find yourself in a prayer chat room, or to be able to turn to certain websites that are able to give you great comfort, give you an opportunity to interact with not only one person but many people. I mean, there are really some incredible chances today to be able to really cling to your faith and to see that prayer really is a part of that.
When you look over the spiritual history of America, and I know trying to establish causes is difficult, but can you point to a few moments in American history where a fair-minded person would say to themselves, it looks like that prayer was answered?
Well, you know, it's amazing. I hate to be able to put my mind into a place where I say God did this or did that on a particular day.
But I understand.
Having said that, this new book that I just wrote called The Treasury of American Prayer, which really has nothing but prayers, hundreds of prayers that Americans have written over the course of our history, everyone from Benjamin Franklin to Mary Pickford to Conrad Hilton. I have, really been able to probe the prayer life of so many people. And there's several things that jump out at me. For example, I had the chance to...
Got about 10 seconds.
I had the chance to be able to visit with the last surviving daughter of J.C. Penney, who was able to give me great detail about how he almost committed suicide. If it had not been for prayer, he would have done just that.
I'll tell you what. Can you stay with me another segment?
I'd love to.
All right. Jim Moore with me.
Today, we're interviewing Mr. Know-It-All.
I knew that.
So, Mr. All, how did you get so smart?
Third grade. Sister service class.
You mean sister taught you stuff like calculus and philosophy?
And how to set a table and how to fix a car. Oh, you ain't seen nothing until you see Sister Sarah break down an engine. Wow!
That's hard to believe.
You're not kidding. And she never soiled a habit. A miracle.
So tell us, how do you fix your car?
Here's what I do. I drive to Fozzie's Auto Repair on West Stadium, go up to the desk and say, Fozzie, would you please fix my car?
That's it?
Sometimes I say, Fozzie, would you please fix my car today?
Why not fix it yourself?
just because I know it all doesn't mean I have to do it all, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Come to Fonzie's Auto Repair this week and get an oil change for as low as $16.99. Or save 15% off the full price of any major auto repair just by saying you heard it on WDEO. Fonzie's, located on Stadium, just south of Jackson Road. Call toll-free 1-800-895-8700. That's 895-8700. Fonzie's Auto Repair. It's your car, our reputation. Christmas shopping getting you down? Can't find the right gift that keeps Christ in Christmas? We'll stop into G.A. Fuchs at 32525 Stevenson Highway in Madison Heights. They have a huge selection of nativities, including Fontanini. They also have a great selection of ornaments, rosaries, crucifixes, saint medals, and a newly remodeled book department. With numerous Christmas titles and a recent bestseller by Pope Benedict XVI, Jesus of Nazareth. For your convenience, they've just lengthened their business hours. On Thursdays and Fridays, they'll now be open from 9:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. until Christmas. That's right. Every Thursday and Friday, they'll be open from 9:30 until 7. So stop on in and check them out. Or call them at 800-824-7600. Remember, that's G.A. Fuchs, 32525 Stevenson Highway in Madison Heights. Helping to keep Christ in Christmas.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. With me is a James Moore Jr. teacher, teaches at the McDonough School of Business at Georgetown, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Commerce, and student of the habit of prayer in American life. He's written Prayer in America, A Spiritual History of Our Nation, and more recently, The Treasury of American Prayer. I'd ask the question, if you, in looking over the history, the spiritual history of America, are there moments that you can know where prayer seems to have had a notable impact? And you demurred, saying that you don't want to put yourself in the position of analyzing the great providential causes of history. That's for God to do. But you did have stories to tell me.
Yes, and you know, I think that it's in some ways, Al, it's even more important to realize that, and I think the single greatest conclusion that I came to with both of these books and the documentary films with PBS that have come out from them is the notion that if it had not been for prayer, that the history of this country would have been far different than what it has turned out to be. Mm. I was mentioning about J.C. Penney, yeah, who was about to commit suicide. He was facing some severe depression. He went to a sanitarium up in Battle Creek, Michigan. And
The Kellogg Sanitarium?
That's right.
Yeah.
And despite the fact that he was under a professional care at the time, he was returning to his room one morning, really ready to commit suicide because he believed that all had been lost. And as he was returning to his room, he overheard this small little group singing a hymn with the words, "Don't worry, God will take care of it." And he kept replaying those words over and over in his mind, and finally he decided, maybe I shouldn't take my own life, and he didn't. And so you think to yourself, my goodness gracious, if it had not been for a prayer at that particular moment, how different J.C. Penney's life might have turned out.
Wow.
And how different perhaps the retail industry might have turned out.
Yeah.
I'm reminded two other very quick instances, one of Martin Luther King Jr., who had taken on the cause of Rosa Parks in 1954 in Montgomery, Alabama. Well, at the end of 1954, literally on New Year's Eve, he and his wife, who had just delivered their first baby, who was 2 months old, went to bed early. And on New Year's Day, around 2 or 3 in the morning, a white racist called on the telephone and said, "If you don't get out of town in the next few hours, we're going to kill you and your family, and we're going to burn your house to the ground." And so very quietly, Martin Luther King Jr. Hung up the receiver, went into the kitchen and poured himself a cup of coffee and began to pray and said, "Dear Lord, it was one thing when I was a young man and had no responsibilities. I have this young family. I ask you to take this burden off my shoulders in leading the civil rights movement. And please make sure I don't look like a coward in the process." But the more he continued to pray, the more he finally decided that he needed to pursue leading the civil rights movement. And he would later refer to that particular moment in prayer as his kitchen conversion. And so once again, if he had not been able to turn to prayer, how different his history might have been, how different our history might have been. And probably the greatest example in terms of the founding of our country were our founding fathers coming together for the first time in September of 1774, trying to figure out how to take on this menace of the British. And as they came together, they had never set eyes on one another, let alone worked together. And they began to hear rumors coming from Boston that families of the patriots, of the representatives from Massachusetts, had been in harm's way and that the British were burning their homes to the ground. And so it was Sam Adams, of all people, from Massachusetts, who stood up and said, you know, before we take up one piece of business, we need to come together in prayer.
You know, it is funny. We generally don't think of Sam Adams as a man of piety. We think of him as a firebrand revolutionary propagandist, a pamphleteer.
He was indeed. But the notion that somehow that there was a need to be able to turn to prayer, Sam Adams was making clear that, A, we would turn to divine providence for guidance, and it would be a way of binding us so that we would be able to understand our larger perspective.
Yeah.
And so, again, essentially a tradition in which every single day that the Continental Congress came together, they made sure they began their day in prayer. And that is a tradition that has continued to this very day in both the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate.
That's just amazing. When I was growing up, and it's always difficult to gauge because we mature and sometimes we miss things when we were younger that we would have noticed had we been older. But I don't remember growing up in my history lessons in high school or even when I was at Michigan State in college. I don't remember when dealing with the biographies of people or profiles or vignettes of major historical figures, very much attention being given to spirituality in general or to prayer in particular. However, picking up popular biographies today, I do find more attention being given to the spiritual, the religious, the spiritual disciplines of the lives of great figures. I mean, sometimes there isn't much to talk about, but frequently there is. Is there a greater interest on the part of historians in the spiritual dimension of people's lives?
You know, it's funny. This is a question that I have talked about in some depth with someone who your listeners will be very familiar with, Father Benedict Rochelle, who
sure.
I dedicated this book to, this latest book, The Treasury of American Prayer. And, you know, it was amazing to me when I would be reading biographies that had been written a number of years ago, but biographies that are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages about particular individuals and very little being discussed about their religious or spiritual life.
Right.
And yet, you know, if the individuals, for example, as many of them would go, if they went to Sunday school when they were growing up throughout their childhood, if they went to church, that is an extremely important part of who they are.
Sure.
And it has been frustrating to me at times to see that element has not been a part of it, of these biographies. I think that biographers, historians are getting better at it, but I think they still have a way to go, because if each one of us is the sum total of everything we've ever seen or heard or felt or all of the senses that we have, then certainly our religious and spiritual life, no matter how private, has got to obviously have a very, very important part of who and what we are.
Now, you've shown an interest in the people's prayer experience, and in this Treasury of American Prayer, I mean, you've got contributions here from philosophers and farmers, from Native American tribal chiefs, slaves, industrialists, activists. You got one, Elvis Presley has a simple plea. If so many people do pray, why is it commonly thought that religion is a divisive force?
Well, you know, it's at times, quite frankly, religion that is practiced improperly can be the vice of force. The intolerance, the sorts of things that we saw occur on September the 11th.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing about this country is the fact that it really brought together an entrepreneurial spirit when it comes to spirituality that has continued to this day. For example, despite the tremendous diversity that existed when Native Americans were facing European Americans, facing African Americans, the one common thing that they all did have together was a belief in prayer,
mm-hmm.
and a practice
right.
of prayer. And that was something that was very striking to me. But to give you an idea, you know, in the launching of this American Prayer Project, Al, which was back just 3 years ago, we did the launching at the Washington National Cathedral. I was the host for the evening. It was an evening of a concert before 2,000 people in which people of different faiths came together to be able to show how they worship and how they pray. And it was mainly in song, but also dance. In fact, a wonderful group from a Catholic church here in the Washington, D.C. area performed both in singing and in dance. But what happened was the beginning of this service in this magnificent cathedral began with everyone singing the exact same hymn to try to show the unity of the human family. Then they began to express themselves individually as to their various faiths. And then at the end of that particular concert, everyone filed out in Amazing Grace and singing it up to the rafters. The whole thing began, however, when there were three Muslim clerics who actually cried out for prayer, and then finally a Jewish rabbi came out and raised the shofar, and he cried out for prayer.
Yeah.
And so I think so often, and certainly Pope Benedict XVI has made clear that we need to have an understanding of one another
yeah.
when it comes time to dealing with prayer and the faith that so many of us have. And I think this country is certainly the great experiment for that.
Yeah, I do too. And even in the documents of the Second Vatican Council, its decree on ecumenism there, the place to begin at the grassroots level when one wants to develop a more ecumenical approach to things is just to learn to pray with others.
Right.
I think that's this. I'm all for theology and apologetics. I love them, but the prayer is a very good place of common ground for U.S. citizens to share, which points beyond ourselves and beyond even our nation.
You bet, and you know, Al, I've often found that in listening to the prayers of others, that it does not in any way dilute my faith; it dilates it.
Yeah. Yeah, yes, that's good. That's good. It's also difficult to stay, it's also difficult to hate people you're praying for.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And that's a basic of Catholic Church tenet.
Now, tell me more about the Prayer Project. What's the future look like? Where else are you going with it?
Well, we'll see what happens. I'm delighted that actually this latest book, which came out last week, has really taken on a bit of a life of its own. As you may know, not only did the first book, One Nation Under God, The History of Prayer in America, come out in book form, but we did the audio book, and I was able to grab some people to help me out. John McCain was the voice of Stonewall Jackson and Harry Truman and George Patton, and I was able to get Ben Vereen to be the voice of the slaves, and really an incredible group of people. Father Coughlin, who is the first Catholic chaplain in the House of Representatives, he and Lloyd Ogilvie, who was the Senate chaplain, recreated the prayers they delivered the day after September the 11th, and so had 20 incredible individuals of that kind to help me with that project. And then we began the, thanks to a wonderful multi-million-dollar grant from the Templeton Foundation,
yep.
we were able to see that book was made into a wonderful documentary for public television, and it is a school project. This spring, for example, public, private, and parochial schools across this country will be able to have a video streaming of actually a five-part program on the importance of prayer in American life.
Wow, that's
and
tremendous.
And also created an incredible series of music CDs showing how prayer has developed the great American genres of music. When you think about the spirituals started to jazz, rhythm and blues, gospel music, and the hymns of Appalachia, country western, folk music. And so we put together this incredible music CD that the first one called The Many Voices of One Nation Under God that has everybody from Leonard Bernstein to Loretta Lynn to Hank Williams, Ella Fitzgerald, Duke Ellington. I mean, it's extraordinary. And so it's really showing the spiritual diversity and vibrancy of our country. And so this really just is the gift that keeps on giving, quite frankly. And, you know, I teach international business, ethics, leadership, management in a business school setting, and here I am. Having put this all together, you know, God throws you curveballs. Did I get one?
Well, it is interesting. Maybe that's the next area for you to go, and that is prayer. Prayer for business leaders and financial leaders.
Absolutely. You know, I had the chance to be able to sit back and interview people like Howard Schultz, who is the really the heart and soul of Starbucks Coffee, for example.
Yeah.
And it is amazing how many of those business leaders, Conrad Hilton is another one, where they truly believe that they, if they had not had the ability to pray, to literally get into a corner quietly and to be able to pray, that these companies, these firms, these big global corporations never would have come into existence.
Yeah.
In fact, Conrad Hilton's mother, he was raised a Catholic and raised in New Mexico, and his mother said, "Now, Conrad, one thing I want to teach you, and that is if you invest in anything, the single most important investment you can make is prayer."
Huh.
And so Conrad Hilton, believe it or not, it is absolutely true, decided that before he would ever purchase a property, I'm not suggesting this to people, but if he ever, for example, with the Plaza Hotel in New York and the Waldorf Astoria, the Mayflower here in Washington, D.C., the Palmer House in Chicago, the St. Francis in San Francisco, he would say a prayer, and if within 48 hours it appeared that somehow things were coming together, he knew it was meant to be, and if it didn't, then he would simply drop it. And he found that by praying, that was a way that he was able to live his life, not only personally, but also professionally.
Wow.
And those stories really continue on through the lives of so many individuals.
It is. It's great to hear this, be able to talk about it publicly, and to reveal what, for so many people, remains a private side of others' lives, and yet it's a side that we all share together. Jim, thanks so much.
How good to talk with you.
Jim Moore is the author of The Treasury of American Prayer.
As we move into Advent, Ave Maria Radio takes a closer look at the season with Advent Retreat with Father Pablo Straub. Father Straub conducts a five-part retreat on the meaning of Advent. You can hear Advent Retreat all this week at 2 p.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
You're listening to Ave Maria Radio, which survives only through the generosity of our listeners. To help spread Ave Maria Radio, become a member by calling 877-288-1077 or visit AveMariaRadio.net.
Looking for an exciting career? RH Publishing is currently launching 5 new local directories and is looking for sales leaders. If you are an experienced print media account executive, this sales position can be a perfect fit. This exciting opportunity, selling display ads in niche market yellow page directories, offers a base salary, plus rewarding commissions, benefits, and incentives throughout the year. A minimum of 1 year advertising sales experience is required. Territories include Wayne, Oakland, Macomb, Washtenaw, and Livingston counties. You must be passionate for sales, a good communicator and team player, self-motivated, enthusiastic, and seeking a full-time position. Positions are limited. Call Kurt today at 1-888-503-8500. That's 1-888-503-8500.
We have now moved into Advent, but what does that mean? Each Saturday, Ave Maria Radio will be broadcasting Advent Reflections. This year, priests from around the great country of Ireland help listeners enter into the liturgical rhythms of Advent. They'll give an inspirational and moving reflection for each week of this great season of preparation for the coming of Christ. Advent Reflections starts this Saturday at 4 p.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Joining me right now is Father Edward Perrone. He is pastor of Assumption Grotto Church in Detroit, where he's been for 14 years, founder and spiritual director of Call to Holiness, the St. Joseph Discalced Carmelite Community, and the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary Carmelite Community in Detroit. He is son of Detroit big band musician Phil Perrone, and studied composing and conducting at the University of Louisville and the Aspen School of Music. And Father Perrone, great to talk with you again.
Well, thanks, Al. Good to hear you.
Well, coming up, tonight at 7 o'clock and Friday at 7 o'clock in the evening, and Sunday, I guess, again.
Sunday at 3.
At 3, okay, good. You will be at Assumption Grotto, and The Heritance will be performed. This is a new musical. You did one last year, too, right?
Yes, we did. We did one for our 175th anniversary last year, and this is a kind of follow-up, although it's not a sequel in the storyline.
Okay, so this, The Heritance, then, picks up it's not a sequel. Tell me, give me the framework for the story.
Well, it's a kind of morality play, as I like to describe it. It's about the power of money and how it can transform lives for good or ill. And so it's kind of an old-fashioned theme, but it's set in the 1920s in Chicago, and the whole thing is very American with baseball and an intrigue and an inheritance, which is what the title means. It's inheritance is the more modern mm-hmm. term, but inheritance is an archaic word for it. And how that money and the inheritance shapes these lives and brings the story to a kind of a happy and delightful ending.
Is it a drama, a romance?
It's a little bit of everything, Al.
Okay.
There's really something that everyone would appreciate, I think. There's melodrama. There's a spoken text over music. There's a lot of comedy in it. Some of it's very funny. There's of course the serious side, that there's the moral to it. It's religious, but not overtly so.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a great family kind of entertainment. It's something that everyone in any age group can identify with and enjoy.
So the entire family should be able to enjoy this.
Yes, I think so, without hesitation.
Now, did you write the script?
I didn't write the script.
Okay.
I wrote the musical mm-hmm. score, but not the text. But they are done by our people too. It's an entirely original piece of work.
That's tremendous. Well, tell me a little bit about the music. What's the range of instrumentation, orchestration?
Well, we have 19 instrumentalists. They're mostly from the DSO, winds, brass, strings, piano, percussion, and mixed choir. And then, of course, those are the people in the pit, as it were.
Uh-huh.
We had to create one in our circumstances. And then, of course, there's the cast on stage. And they're singing children and adults and teens are involved in it. And the music is all kinds of things in it. And there's a little jazz. There's some very romantic kind of Tchaikovsky music.
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
a typical Broadway style, if there is such a thing, the old Broadway show tune kind of thing. It's eclectic in that sense. And there's some purely instrumental pieces, the overture and the preludes to different acts.
Now, when did you begin composing?
It was sometime in the, I would say it was around July.
Wow. So you're capable of producing composition fairly quickly then. I mean, it doesn't sound as though you agonized for years.
No, it wasn't that sort of thing at all.
No.
It was, I thought we were through, actually, with the musicals business after last year, but it was a great success, and so Joe Maher pressed to do another one, and the musical ideas came very quickly. I have to say that was a kind of blessing. The hard thing is writing out the orchestra, the orchestration,
yeah.
That's all time-consuming, but
right.
I just managed to slip it in with my other activities here.
Now, do you did you learn the art of composition at school?
Yes, I majored in composition.
Okay. Well, that helps.
Yes, yes.
Right. Last year you did a musical of this sort. Was that performed as well at Assumption Grotto?
Yes, we did that here, but it was more of a, what shall I say, it was a kind of local celebration. It was it told the story of our parish's founding, of the grotto in the back of the church, from which it gets its popular title, Assumption Grotto, and the story of how the priest went to Lourdes on his anniversary mm-hmm. and came back and built the grotto.
Okay.
And, of course, it was highly fictional, but it was based on at least somewhat a true story. This is an entirely fabricated event, and it's the work of one of our nuns here, Sister Maria Pascalis, and then the script followed with by one of our young people, Renee Cray. She did the script, and Joe Maher, another parishioner, he's directed and produced the thing.
Well, I mean, is this the kind of thing you can do on a regular basis, you think?
Well,
we need, heaven knows, we need entertainment options.
Well, this is really what motivated me more than anything else, is that I saw its great potential. We have young people that have been involved in theater on account of these productions
mm-hmm.
that never would have maybe done any singing in public or dancing or acting, never even thought of it. And not only are they doing it, but they're doing it extremely well,
yeah.
I think. And it's been a great involvement for them in a wholesome activity that's been a maturing thing for them. So I'm very excited for them, and of course they are very excited about doing it. But I think it's something that helps develop character and develops their, what shall I say, latent talents.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases they've not even known they had these gifts. And it allows them to cooperate in a cultural
yes.
thing that's of some cultural significance, some cultural value. There's so much negative stuff out there, as you know, and we all lament it. And our young people are involved in a lot of less honorable pursuits in music and internet and so forth. Well, this is a very positive thing. And to see young people excel in something of a worthy nature is a great joy for all of us.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is a marvelous, as you say, it not only is a character builder for those who are cultivating their talent and unfolding any gifts that God may have given them in these fields, but it also, having to work together on a project like this, really is a community builder as well.
Oh, it's wonderful for the parish.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just brings people together and it makes them interact on a level and an intensity that they've not done before.
Now, was the Catholic Church once known for these kind of activities more so than it is today?
Well, this is certainly the case, and it's a very lamentable thing that in our time, the Church has not been a great promoter of art, and I don't know all the reasons for that. Many sociological reasons, I suppose, could be advanced why, especially in our country, being, you know, the heirs of immigrant peoples, we've not had a rich cultural offering. But I don't know if that's a valid excuse. There may be other things that have made us a little bit more pragmatic in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, I think the Church has been the great promoter of the arts, but there's no question about it. In Western civilization, we practically own the day. You know, it's ours. But we sort of dropped it somewhere. And I don't know if that was due to wars and concerns about doctrinal issues, or the Church has got so involved in its primary work, which is, of course, the essential thing, the preaching of the gospel and evangelization.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, we did get off of it a little bit, and I think that now there's a, especially with this Pope, he's such a cultured man
yes.
in every sense, in philosophy and theology, in music in particular, and has such a great broad appreciation of art, that I feel there's a new spirit at work.
Yeah.
and we're glad to be part of it.
Yeah. Well, it's very exciting, and let me stress again, this is taking place at Assumption Grotto. This is on Gratiot at Seymour in East McNichols in Detroit. And for more information, you can dial 313-372-0762. That's 313-372-0762. It's called The Heritance. It's a new musical, comedy, romance, melodrama, inspirational. It's geared for the, it's a musical thriller for the whole family. That's how it's laid out. There are 14 new original songs performed live with orchestra featuring members of the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. And this sounds like a great family event. It's called, again, The Heritance. And it'll be performed tonight, Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. And it'll be performed again on Friday night at 7. And then Sunday afternoon at 3. This will be at Assumption Grotto, 13770 Gratiot at Seymour and East McNichols there in Detroit. I urge you to, if you can get out there and bring the kids, bring the family, because there are very few live events of this magnitude that are performed in the context of Christ Lordship that we can attend and enjoy like this. So, by all means, get on out there. We'll have the information posted as well at AveMariaRadio.net. So just go to the Cresta Guest Archives there and see Father Edward Perrone, hit it, and all the information will be posted there as well. Father, do you think next year holds another one?
Well, that remains to be seen, of course. There's such enthusiasm already generated by this one.
Good.
That I doubt they're going to let us go without another one, but we'll have to see and leave it in the Lord's hands.
Well, maybe we're seeing the beginning of a Catholic cultural renaissance.
Huh? Oh, I'd love to see it happen.
Yeah, me too. Father, thanks once again.
Good. Thank you, Al. God bless.
Father Edward Perrone of Assumption Grotto, pastor there, and he's also an outstanding composer, musician. I want to stress again, it's called The Heritance, and it's a musical thriller for the whole family. 14 new and original songs, comedy, romance, melodrama, inspirational. Some people think calling it the most exciting theatrical event of the year for Detroit. And for more information, you can go to the AveMariaRadio.net website, go to the Cresta Guest Archives, or call 313-372-0762.
The Catholic Men's Night is a group of guys. Guys who want to grow in faith. Guys who want to grow in their responsibilities as husbands, fathers, sons, and disciples of Jesus Christ. The Catholic Men's Night will hold their next meeting this Thursday, December 4th, at Christ the King Parish Center's gym in Ann Arbor. Just look for the big red barn. This month's speaker will be WDEO's own Al Cresta, host of Cresta in the Afternoon. Al, who loves to take on all comers, has titled his talk, Is Jesus Your Lord or Your Chaplain? Taking inventory of money, sex, and power. Come for Mass at 7:30 p.m., followed by a time of refreshments and fellowship, and then Al's talk. The meetings end promptly at 9:30. The Ave Maria Communications Guild encourages all men in our listening audience to give the Catholic Men's Night a try. You can't miss us. We're located just south of Domino's Farms on Ave Maria Drive in Ann Arbor, near the intersection of Earhart Road. For more information, call 734-930-4524 or on the internet, surf to catholic-men.org.
Christmas shopping getting you down? Can't find the right gift that keeps Christ in Christmas? We'll stop into G.A. Fuchs at 32525 Stevenson Highway in Madison Heights. They have a huge selection of nativities, including Fontanini. They also have a great selection of ornaments, rosaries, crucifixes, saint medals, and a newly remodeled book department. With numerous Christmas titles and a recent bestseller by Pope Benedict XVI, Jesus of Nazareth. For your convenience, they've just lengthened their business hours. On Thursdays and Fridays, they'll now be open from 9:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. until Christmas. That's right. Every Thursday and Friday, they'll be open from 9:30 until 7. So stop on in and check them out. Or call them at 800-824-7600. Remember, that's G.A. Fuchs, 32525 Stevenson Highway in Madison Heights. Helping to keep Christ in Christmas.
Good day. I'm Al Cresta. Coming up in the next hour. Oh, you want more information? Well, then listen. I'll say it again. The Harritans. It's original musical. 14 new songs. It's a new script. It's a brand new piece of theater. And you're going to be able to see it performed at Assumption Grotto Church on Gratiot in Detroit. Again, call for tickets. The number is 313-372-0762. That's 313-372-0762. Now, tonight it's happening at 7 o'clock in the evening. Friday, December 5th, 7 o'clock in the evening. And Sunday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, you can call the Assumption Grotto Rectory for tickets. 313-372-0762. For those of you who know Father Perron, you know when he takes on a project, you know it's quality, it's good, it's theologically and culturally sound, and you're not going to have to... I guess what I'm saying is there's not much risk here. You're talking about some experience in pastoral leadership. You're talking about musical excellence. And you're talking about a man who's able to create a team of talent, creative talent. So we desperately need this genre of theater. And, you know, we've got so many contemporary films, music, and stage productions that we have to resist. Let's get out there and support one that we were happy to fly the flag for, you know. The number again, 313-372-0762. The Harritans. Fascinating story. And you'll be able to hear it, to see it, and enjoy it tonight, Friday night, and Sunday afternoon. More information at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. Advent focuses our minds and hearts on the second coming of Christ. At a time nobody knows, he will return to earth, separate good from evil entirely, and publicly judge every person who ever lived. All the good we have done, especially at the price of ridicule, will be rewarded in the presence of the entire human family and the saints of all time. Those who ridiculed us, especially for our pro-life stance, will be proven wrong and will be ashamed of not having stood for life. As Advent reminds us of these things, let it strengthen us to be even bolder in speaking up for what is true and right. In the light of the eternal judgment and the second coming of Christ, what sacrifice is too great to make for our smallest brothers and sisters who need our help today? This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
It's textbook season, and the biggest need is the Didache series. The Didache series draws from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, Sacred Scripture, the lives of the saints, the fathers of the Church, and the teachings of Vatican II. This series is ideal for high school and adult education, seminaries and colleges, RCIA, catechism classes, and homeschooling. To get the Didache and to learn the tenets of the Church in a comprehensible, accessible way, go to the online store at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Pat McDonald shared about her metastatic cancer in a recent Gospel of Life meeting.
I'm going to kind of give you a little bit of background.